It's time at last for the one show no one is waiting for. You didn't expect this because no one knows who we are. This is Pork Chop Gravy Train with Bacon and Jen. Alright, Pork Champions, Jake here, in his most radio-style voice, letting you know that this is not the first episode. This is just a tribute to the first episode. When we finally produce our first episode, it will be so much better than this, your brains will not even be able to fathom how awesomely spectacular it truly is. I predict earbuds just exploding in orgasmic pleasure. Anyway, hope you're having a good day. Give me a listen if you want. If you like it, send me an email, porkchopgravytrain@gmail.com. Thank you. Hello, my fellow pork chopians. See, it's one of these deals that I just love to cook, I love to eat, and I love weird stuff. Going through a fun little book called the Official Couch Potato Handbook, I found a couple recipes that just look insane and probably taste horrible, but I just have to share them. We have, first of all, the cheese chalk dog. What you're going to need for this is one package of hot dogs, a loaf of white bread, a can of aerosol spray cheese, because who cares about the atmosphere? Now you need to get your power drill with a quarter-inch bit. You need a squeeze bottle of chocolate syrup. And, of course, safety glasses, because why? Safety last. Now, first, do the last thing and put on your safety glasses. Take your unopened package of hot dogs with end pointed towards you, and using the slow speed on your drill, drill through each hot dog lengthwise. Now you're going to open the package, remove the hot dogs, which each having a hole in the center. Now take a can of aerosol spray cheese and fill those holes in the hot dogs with cheese. Now you're going to place the hot dog on a slice of bread, pinch the bread into a trough around the hot dog, and squirt liberally with chocolate syrup. Now then you're going to want to pop that sucker into a toaster oven for about 10 to 12 minutes until the cheese is runny, and there you have the cheese chalk dog. Now if anybody wants to try that and tell me how it is, please let me know. I am mildly curious. Actually, I think I'll be trying that later today, much to my partner's dismay. Ooh. We all like to say fancy words. Pate, for one, and of course, tube steak. A tube steak pate is an award-winning recipe in the 1982 Chef Aldo International Couch Potato Bake Off. It comes highly recommended for its near European sensibility. All right. Sounds very suave and deboner. Ingredients are, again, Oscar Mayer hot dogs, sweet pickle relish, green olives with pimentos left in, saltine crackers, mayonnaise, pepper, and a blender bit for a drill. Now what you want to do is rev the blender bit up to full speed and drop that on the hot dog. You're going to throw in a tablespoon of relish, throw in two olives, and blend that sucker for about another 90 seconds. You're going to take some saltines out, spread them out, cover them with some mayo, and then you're going to spread your pate over the crackers, cover it in mayo, and add pepper to taste. Sounds horrible. Or good. I'd probably eat that. Really, that now that I think about it. I'm going to give y'all one more recipe here. extra sharp carrot cake. The author calls this an extra easy version of an old-time favorite, almost indistinguishable from traditional recipes. The cola and spices even turn the Bisquick a rich golden brown color. Feel free to double the recipe and use a regular size aluminum pie tin. Y'all's ingredients: 2 to 3 skinny carrots, 1/2 of a handful of brown sugar, 1 can of cola, Pepsi, Coke, whichever you prefer. A little bit of an RC man myself, just because I don't like that either. Take 1 handful of biscuit, because Bisquick, because I can't talk, and I'm also not precise, so we measure in handfuls here. Gonna have a 1/2 handful of pumpkin pie spices and an electric pencil sharpener. Why not? So, you're gonna take your carrots and shred them in your clean, I will stress that enough, clean pencil sharpener. Line the bottom of a pot pie tin with carrot shavings. Throw in your handfuls of Bisquick, sugar, and spices. Knead slowly with your hands, adding in small amounts of your soda. Continue to knead, add cola until the batter is the consistency of fresh Play-Doh. You can add more sugar and pumpkin pie spices as you see fit as you're going, because it's y'all's dish. Do what you want with it. Now you're going to put that in a toaster oven, a regular oven, at 400 degrees for about 15 to 22 minutes. When cool, carrot cake can be frosted with canned or aerosol frosting for a real health treat. There you go. And on a side note, according to this book, Swedes drink more coffee than anybody else. Is that a challenge? I think so. Roadkill. There was a test done in the late 80s, early 90s, how people would react to animals on the highway. Now, for whatever reason, this gentleman who ran the test out of Southern Louisiana University used reptiles as his medium for the test to see how people would react. So this guy went out there and put snakes and turtles on the road. Snakes? Really snakes? So what they did, to find how drivers would respond to reptiles on the road, this man, his name was David Shepard. Shepard and his crew would put the fake snakes and turtles in places where drivers would hit them if they kept driving straight. They also put the rubber reptiles where drivers had to go out of their way to hit them. Upon the conclusion, Shepard commented, "We found that while 87% of drivers tried to avoid the animals, 6% went out of their way to hit them, with snakes getting squashed twice as often as turtles." Duh. Okay. So, the weird reactions. Apparently, there's something about a reptile on the road that makes some drivers bloodthirsty. A few examples. Shepard witnessed a truck driver cross the center line into the opposite lane of traffic, drove onto the shoulder of the road just to run over a turtle. Thankfully, it was fake. A housewife saw what she thought was a snake in the road, swerved to kill it, then turned around and ran over it 5 more times. And finally, a policeman crushed a snake with his tires, burned rubber on it, then stopped, got out, pulled out his gun. And the team had to run out to stop the policeman from shooting the snake. The whole conclusion was some people just have a mean streak toward animals. No, I think people have a mean streak towards snakes. They creep people out. Come on. And on a side note, The patent for the ballpoint pen was awarded to John J. Loud of Weymouth, Massachusetts in 1888. Moving on. So, how about a little bit of patriotic myth-busting here? So, our myth. Nathan Hale, an American soldier during the Revolutionary War, was captured by the British and sentenced to hang. When the Redcoats asked if he had any last words, he stared at them, replied defiantly, "I regret that I have but one life to lose for my country." The truth, he never said that, or anything remotely close to it. According to the diary of a soldier who was there, Captain Frederick McKenzie, Hale's last words were brave, but not very inspiring. They were, "It is the duty of every good officer to obey the orders given him by his commander-in-chief." Yeah, not quite exactly the same, is it? All right, so what do we got next? Abraham Lincoln hurriedly composed his most famous speech, the Gettysburg Address, on the back of an envelope while riding on a train from Washington, D.C. to the site of the speech in Gettysburg. The story apparently originated with Lincoln's son, Robert, who first created it in a letter he wrote after his father was assassinated. The truth, they say, Lincoln actually started writing the speech 2 weeks before the event, and wrote at least 5 drafts before even leaving Washington for Gettysburg. He was not particularly keen on speaking spontaneously. In fact, he even refused to say anything to the crowd that met him at the Gettysburg train station because he was afraid he might say something foolish. And he did say he was kind of shy and felt awkward, so, but kind of rings true. All right, that's fair. And the Liberty Bell. Let's look at the Liberty Bell, which got its name when it was rung on July 4th, 1776 to commemorate declared independence. That's right, America. They rang that bell and said, "Screw you, England." Anyway, this tale was invented by writer George Lippard in his 1874 book, Legends of the American Revolution. The truth, they say, at least in this book, the Liberty Bell was installed in Philadelphia in 1753, about 23 years before the colonists rebelled. And it has nothing whatsoever to do with the revolution. Its nickname, Liberty Bell, was coined by abolitionists in 1839. They were referring to the end of slavery in America, not the freedom of England. Now, there's something, huh? Did anybody know that the Russian Tsar Peter the Great was nearly 7 feet tall? That's one to noodle on. Next. Sneezing, people. It's a thing. Or persons. Mole people. Peepie. Poople. I'm just going to call you pork choppers or pork choppians. Keep it simple. Pork chop. Anyway, sneezing. Why do we say God bless you when you sneeze? There's a fellow who checked it out, came up with some answers, and he gave it to us in The Extraordinary Origins of Everyday Things. There's some superstitions for centuries, you know. Mankind believed that life's essence, our soul, resided in the head, and that a sneeze could accidentally expel that vital force. The suspicion was reinforced by the deathbed sneezing of the sick. So every effort was made to hold back sneezes, and the inadvertent or unsuppressed sneeze was greeted with the immediate good luck chance. The Greek Enlightenment arrived in the 4th century BC with the teachings of Aristotle and Hippocrates, the father of medicine. Both Greek scholars explain sneezing as the head's reaction to a foreign or offensive substance that crept into the nostrils. I think that's pretty much right, isn't it? They observed that sneezing, when associated with existing illness, often foretold death. For these ill-boding sneezes, they recommended such benedictions as "Long may you live," "May you enjoy good health," and "Jupiter preserve you." The Romans, about 100 years later, expanded the lore and superstition surrounding sneezes. They preached the view that sneezing by an otherwise healthy individual was the body's attempt to expel the sinister spirits of later illnesses. Thus, to withhold a sneeze was to incubate disease. So it was good to sneeze. You were inviting debility and death by holding it in. Consequently, a vogue of sneezing swept the Roman Empire and engendered a host of new post-sneeze benedictions, like congratulations. Could you imagine just sneezing over somebody, just like full nasal blast just on somebody and them congratulating you for it? Oh, that would be... It sounds gross now and slightly hilarious, but Oh, God, I just... Or good luck. Oh, my God. That was the Christians, though. They were the ones who added "God bless you." And that came from the Pope, somewhere around the 6th century during the reign of Gregory the Great. A virulent pestilence raged throughout Italy, and one foreboding symptom being severe chronic sneezing. It was so deadly that people died shortly after manifesting its symptoms. So, wow. So as soon as you started sneezing, you were like, oh, he's gone. And apparently it was right. Wow, okay. So I didn't realize it was that fast. I've heard that before, but all right, getting sidetracked. Pope Gregory beseeched the healthy to pray for the sick. He also ordered that such well-intended, though leisurely phrases, "May you enjoy good health," be replaced with his own more urgent and pointed invocation, "God bless you." So I was like, this guy, quick, God bless you now. You're going to die. God bless you. And if no well-wisher was around to make the blessing, the sneezer was advised to exclaim aloud, "God help me." Pope Gregory's post-sneeze supplication spread throughout Europe hand in hand with the Black Plague, and the serious in which a sneeze was regarded has captured a new expression which survives to this day, "not to be sneezed at." Does that exist now? I don't know. Anyway, I probably forgive my reading. I'm doing bad at this moment, but I'm trying. Come on, go me. I'm trying. World-class sneezing. Guinness Book of World Records, the most chronic sneezing fit ever recorded is that of Donna Griffiths on January 13, 1981. A 12-year-old from Pershore, England, began sneezing and kept sneezing every day for 978 days. The previous record was 194, so that kid knocked that record out of the park. In the first year, she sneezed an estimated 1 million times. Her first sneeze-free day in almost 3 years was September 16th, 1983. Can you imagine? Oh, that's gotta be painful. And see, Guinness Book has somehow come up with an account of the most powerful sneeze ever recorded. I would love to learn how, but apparently At the time of this book's publication, the highest speed for a sneeze which expelled particles have been measured to travel, it says, at 103 miles per hour. And here's one last thing for this little section. Bring home the bacon. That phrase comes from the 1700s, when the term bacon was criminal slang for booty or loot. If you brought home the bacon, you fulfilled your mission and returned with the goods that you were supposed to steal. Which is kind of how we use it today, only without the stealing part, right? The first gold record ever awarded to a musical artist went to Glenn Miller for Chattanooga Choo Choo. And you're welcome. Well, okay. I think that'll do it for today. For those of you who decided to join me and listen on this little trip, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Hopefully I will get to do this again. Take care, and best luck to y'all out there.